While I don't, as a rule, try to corral young people into the life of the rabbinate, there are certain advantages to being a rabbi. One of them is that you get to stand up and talk about things that you actually know nothing about. And most people are polite enough not to come up to you afterwards and say, "You obviously know nothing about that, Rabbi. Please don't talk about it again." Generally, the corrections that I receive, and I do receive some corrections, my email address again is, never mind, are relatively polite. People correct facts or opinions or whatever, but generally they don't say, "You just don't know what you're talking about." But this morning I'm going to begin by talking about something that I really know nothing about, even though I do it every day. I'm going to talk about secrets of management. That's the last president of the synagogue laughing back there. Thank you, Eric. Very grateful for that public humiliation. That, by the way, is completely deserved. And we used to talk about the fact that it was somewhat ironic that here I was running an organization when budget sheets to me are like Akkadian or ancient Greek. And I know what the numbers are, but just not what they mean. And yet, I'm going to talk about it, even though I've only read one management book in my life at the urging, by the way, of another rabbi. And I do recommend it's a great book, even though I remember almost nothing about it. Jim Collins' Good to Great, which was a really wonderful book and in some ways influenced me. But I'm nonetheless going to talk about the management secrets of Moshe Rabbeinu. How did Moses manage? And you can't come up to me afterwards and say, "Well, you know nothing about it," because you see, I have preempted that criticism by telling you in advance that I know nothing about it. So now I feel free to talk and invulnerable from any attack. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because this past week, I spent part of the week working on an article for Tablet Magazine, which is an online Jewish magazine that I, by the way, recommend to you, has wonderful articles about God's love. And I began the article that's supposed to come out, not this week, but next week, right before Yom Kippur. I began the article by talking about the death of Moses and the relationship that Moses has with God. And it reminded me again of something that Shaul Lieberman once said when someone asked him, the great Talmud scholar, who was the most tragic figure in the Bible? And Lieberman said, "That's easy, God. Because God always wants just one thing and never gets it." But if you think of human beings, even though there are lots of candidates for the most tragic person in the Bible, you could say King Saul, you could say Samson, but I think you might have to go with Moshe. Because remember what happens even up to this week. Moshe, first of all, is born as an abandoned child, grows up in a home that is not his own, walks out into Egyptian society and sees injustice, tries to fix it, discovers that other people are threatening him because of his thirst for justice, so he runs away to Midian. And there, for the first time in his life, he's leading a calm life with a family that he created. He has a wife, he has children, he has a father-in-law with whom he was apparently very close. And God has to come along and ruin it all. Moses sees the bush, comes up to the bush, and God tells him, "Go to Pharaoh." And what does Moses say? "No, I don't want to. I don't talk right. Pharaoh won't listen to me." Moses makes excuse after excuse because he doesn't want this in his life. He wants to stay in Midian and lead a quiet life, a good life, the one thing that he has never known, and God won't let him. Finally, Moses says, Shlach na biyad tishlach, which means, roughly translated, send anyone you want other than me. And God says, you have no choice. I'll assign you Aaron to speak for you if you think you can't speak, but you, Moses, have to go. That's what I've decided. So Moses goes to Pharaoh, brings plagues and death. And remember, reading about it, it may seem like a very dramatic story, but actually, if you can imagine what that must mean, plagues and death. Moses not only must have thought he was ripped from a warm, quiet family life, but in order to wreak havoc on the civilization around him, in order to liberate these people with whom he feels some connection, but we're not clear what, because he didn't grow up, after all, among the Hebrews and as a slave. And finally, he gets them out. Then, the peak of his life, he goes up the mountain to get the commandments from God, and when he comes down, what are they doing? This people that he has come out of quiet living in order to liberate through all this storm and drum, through all these plagues and death, they're worshiping an idol. So he smashes the tablets. And God says to him, you know what, Moses? I'm going to wipe this people out. And he says, no, you can't wipe them out. And so then he takes the people and he begins to wander through the desert. And they're doing okay, not great. There are rebellions, don't forget. Korach rebels against him. His own brother and sister gossip about him. He's betrayed again and again by everyone who's closest to him. His brother, his sister, the people. And then he makes one mistake. God says, speak to the rock. He hits the rock, and finally he's betrayed by God. Because God says to him, you're not going to get to go into the land that I promised to the people and that you have given your entire life to bring the people to. But it gets worse this morning. Because with all of that, and God knows that's enough, with the fact that Moses sends spies into the land to see it, and they come back and they say, oh, we can never conquer this land. So not only has he given his whole life in order to get the people there, but the people themselves don't seem to want it. They say, why don't we just go back to Egypt? There are enough graves there. If we're going to die, why not die there instead of in the desert? And then this morning, you know what God tells Moses? He says, I want you to know, after you die and are buried, they're going to violate your law again. So in other words, it's not enough that Moses is betrayed by everyone close to him in life. He's going to be betrayed, God has to let him know, by the people after he dies. It is hard to imagine a leader who is treated more shabbily, more poorly than Moses. Don't get me wrong. We've treated other leaders very badly in the Bible. Jeremiah, Ezekiel, the prophets were not well treated. But Moses is in a class by himself. And yet, with all of this, somehow, Moses manages not only to survive until the last moments before they go into the land, but to be seen as a great leader, not to be crushed by the successive disasters and betrayals that plague his life. And you wonder, how is it? What secret does Moses have that makes him what we used to call a great leader, but in today's market parlance, we might call an outstanding manager? And I think Moses had two management secrets. And for those of you who actually do run businesses, I offer them to you now as somebody who never has, and God willing, never will, run a business or make a profit. The first thing that characterizes Moses is once he's given the mission, he never wavers. He knows what it is he must do in order to achieve what it is he must achieve. And nothing can derail him. Not rebellion, not God's anger, not 40 years in the desert when they were supposed to originally go straight to Israel. We forget that. They weren't originally supposed to wander. That was a punishment for the spies. None of it will prevent Moses from keeping his eye on Israel because he knows he has to get them there. And even if he doesn't get to go there, he knows he has to get them there. That's his job. And that kind of single-minded vision for a good thing, because single-minded vision can be good or bad, depending on what it's fixed on, but that kind of single-minded vision for a noble goal is Moses' first secret. It's not sufficient, but it is necessary. He knows where he's going, and he never doubts that getting there is worth all the trouble. But here's the second secret. And I know that I'm not the only one who knows this secret. And in fact, many years ago when I was first, I think I was a rabbinical student, and I wish I knew who the rabbi was, but I know that it was an older rabbi, and I was speaking for what was then called the University of Judaism, now called the AJU. And an older rabbi came to me and he said, "So you're going to be a rabbi?" I said, "Yeah, you know, that's the plan." And he said, "If you're going to be a rabbi, there's really only one thing that you must have if you're going to survive." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Ahavat Yisrael. You have to love the Jewish people. If you don't love the Jewish people," he said, "they will kill you." I'm just quoting. But you know what? Look at Moses. Moses is the best example of this. Remember what happens? God says to Moses, "I'm going to wipe them out and I'm going to make you a great nation. Forget them." And Moses says, "No, you cannot do that. If you wipe them out, then wipe me out of the book you've written. I want no place in it. If you destroy the people I love." And even though nowhere in the Torah does it say Moses loved the Jewish people, it's clear that Moses loved the Jewish people. Because he doesn't want his own lineage to be the people who enter Israel. He wants this people that he took from slavery into the desert. He wants them to enter Israel. That's his management secret. It's not the product, it's the people. Because remember that Moses, as everyone in some sense, is in the business of shaping people. That's what he's doing. And that's true whether you make widgets or you own real estate. What you're really doing is in the process, one way or another, better or worse, of shaping yourself and the people you deal with in every transaction, every day. That's what it's all about. And Moses loved them. And then, although this wasn't a management secret, there was one other. And this really is what the article starts with, about God's love. It's never said explicitly, but anybody who reads the Torah knows that Moses and God loved each other. They loved each other. At the end of the Torah, it says what? That Moshe saw God panim el panim, face to face. In other words, with love. That's what it is. And that's true of Israel as well as of Moses, but it's true because Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher, told us this. The chronicle of the Jewish people and God is sometimes a story of struggle and a story of wandering, but mostly it's a love story. So when in the Parsha this morning, God tells Moses, this people is going to violate the law the moment you leave them, the second you die. How does Moses respond? Out of his sadness, he writes a song. And he says, just carry this song with you. Write this Torah. Remember the words I spoke even when I'm gone. In other words, since the Torah, remember, in the Jewish tradition, is a ketubah, is a marriage contract, remember, says Moses, how I loved you. And if you remember that, you will stray, you will betray, but you won't abandon. You'll always come back to me, to the Torah, and to God. So there you go. That's how Moses did it. He believed in the land that he saw. He loved the people that he led. And he was intimate with God. You might not be able to put that in a management book. But if you did, it would be called the Torah. Shabbat Shalom.